Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thanks very much for hanging around with us today. And if you just tuned in, welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here. My website is www.jbsba.com. And don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. And if you subscribe this week, you will be able to receive the column that I wrote, the article that I wrote on Leadership Lessons by Ronald Reagan. And I've gotten a lot of comments back from folks about that article. I appreciate all those comments. And I'm glad you liked it. So if you subscribe this week, you'll be able to get that. And that's at jbsba.com. And don't forget all the other things you can do there, including going back later today and listening to the interview that I'm about to have with our good friend Governor Pete DuPont, because I know you're going to want to hear whatever he has to say. I know you're going to want to hear it over and over again. Governor Pete DuPont, welcome back to the show.
Well, Jim, good morning. You give me the best introduction.
I
hope somebody wants to hear it over and over again, but you never know.
And you know what, folks? I didn't even tell you all the good stuff. He's a policy chairman at the National Center for Policy Analysis. He's former U.S. congressman from Delaware. He's former two-term governor of Delaware, a former presidential candidate. Thank goodness he didn't have to run against Ronald Reagan. But Governor, congratulations on your service to our country. As we stand here today in the process of eulogizing and burying one of America's greats.
Well, the outpouring of respect and remembrance and sadness for Ronald Reagan is just unbelievable. I mean, hundreds of thousands of people, and of course, he is a former president. And of course, he was well liked. But I think this outpouring of respect and remembrance has kind of stunned even the media. You and I were talking about that just before we got started, and I think they're surprised. And you know, thinking back in my memory, the only two comparable outpourings of emotion were Franklin Roosevelt's death. Mm-hmm. In the 1940s, and of course there was no television then, so it was all newspaper and radio, mm-hmm. And the tremendous outpouring of grief for John F. Kennedy after he was shot, and
which was a shock to the nation,
which was a tremendous shock, and President Reagan's services and turnout have been and public statements of respect have just been overwhelming.
Well, I think you're right. As my audience knows, I don't have a life. I just do what I do and watch the news. I'm a news junkie and I've been watching this so much of the coverage this week because I didn't want to miss anything. I didn't have to miss. I wanted to hear what other people had to say about this, and I just keep getting the feeling that there are people out there who just can't believe that America loved Ronald Reagan the way they do. A friend of mine, Rich Galen, I'm not sure, I don't know if you know Rich or not, but
yes.
but Rich is a Republican operative, and he's going to be on the show in the next hour. He writes a piece in his column Mullings, Mullings.com, and today's piece, he was talking about being out there yesterday when the caisson came by. He was actually on one of the lines, so to speak, watching the caisson go by and watching Nancy Reagan go by. And he was remarking about the three generations of people he saw, like a mother, a father, their children, and the grandmother, and he was remarking about here are three generations out here looking, you know, just to get a glimpse of Ronald Reagan, maybe the history that's being made, maybe the civics lesson that's there, but either way, isn't this what's great about America?
Oh, I mean, I think I think watching television, if you were from another planet, and you watched and saw this, you would say, this is the most extraordinary country. I mean, here's a man who was president 20 years ago, And look at this outpouring of respect and remembrance. And, of course, one of the reasons, first of all, he was just an extraordinary person. I mean, he was that most optimistic. He was the most...
He was pathologically optimistic, wasn't he?
And tell you a story. He was confident. He believed in things. And, you know, you don't find a lot of politicians who really believe in things. And all this is now kind of flooding back in the minds of the American people, and it's just been an extraordinary week.
You know, Governor, as we go to the break, one of the things I was thinking this week is this is on in a world where at a time when all news is global news, I think this is good PR for America.
Oh,
in his last week. President Reagan provided the United States yet another gift. 2012, stay with us. We'll be right back with our good friend, Governor Pete DuPont. Back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Governor Pete DuPont. And ladies and gentlemen, I never have thought I lived very much of a charmed life, but I do feel that way a little bit right now because we asked Governor DuPont to be on the show early last week. So he's been scheduled. He was scheduled many days before Ronald Reagan died, and so it's just such it's just so fortuitous. For me, and I know for you too, to have Governor DuPont with us on the day that we're going to bury the 40th President of the United States. And Governor, what's really cool for me, and probably the only thing I really envy you this much about, is the fact that I know that you've spent a number of hours in the presence of Ronald Reagan talking to him. And I'd like for you to talk to us a little bit about those experiences, if you don't mind.
Well, I did. I was elected... governor in 1976, and that was Reagan's first kind of president shot at trying to get the presidential nomination, and obviously he was working on 1980 already. So he went around the country and visited a lot of people, and he came to see me. Actually, I just moved into a new governor's office, and I didn't have very much furniture. I had to move furniture in from down the hall to chat with him, and he was that was the first time I'd ever really talked to him, and I thought to myself, well, this is an extraordinary man. He he has interesting questions to ask. He tells stories about what he did when he was young.
And you didn't think he was an amiable dunce like Clark Clifford called him?
I don't think so. I thought he was a wonderful person, and he and I were following he in the grand country of America in the 1980s, and me in a small little state of Delaware. We were following the same economic policies, the mm-hmm. substantial tax reductions that created the growth. So we had kind of a bond, and I got invited after he was shot and spent his weeks in the hospital. He came back to the White House. And he invited a half a dozen of us to come in shortly after he returned to the White House and chat with him. And the staff member said, you know, the president needs a little cheering up. He's lying in bed and he's hurting and he'd like to talk to some people.
I'll
and so
darned.
Half a dozen of us came in and he was a little paler. And he wasn't obviously walking around, but he was the same old Reagan. He was making jokes, wanting to know what was going on, what was the Congress doing. I mean, he was just the best imaginable person, and I got to know him very well. We talked a lot of economic policy subjects over his time in office. He's just one of my heroes.
Mine too. One of my favorite stories is the story that his first. National Security Advisors told the story about, and I've forgotten the guy's name, but he tells a story about meeting him in the 70s, late 70s, between 76 and 80, and they were talking about the Cold War and what to do about the Cold War. And the guy said, you know, Ronald, and he said, what do you think, Governor Reagan? And he said, well, how about this? We win, they lose.
Right.
I love that.
He was very much like that.
He said, and the guy said, nobody else had ever said that.
No, he was willing to say things that way and make them clear. And you know, when I try to boil all this down and say, you know, what did he really believe? And I think you can summarize it in 7 or 8 words. He believed that individuals should have more choices and government should have less choices.
Yeah.
And that about says it all.
Well, and that the essence of that is one of the main reasons why he's one of my heroes, because that's exactly what I believe. I think he believed that when human beings have the ability to make to seek their own goals, that almost anything is solvable. Any challenge is solvable.
And it makes the country prosper. He also had a lot of political courage. I mean, he was willing to call the Soviet Union an evil empire.
Right.
I mean, that ran against the grain of the educational institutions, against the grain of the press, against what you were supposed to say. Everyone was supposed to be nice to the Russians. They were just another kind of government that we really ought to appreciate, you know, so on and so forth. And he was absolutely willing to tell things the way they were, and that made him an even more effective president.
To have the presumption to go to Berlin and tell Mr. Gorbachev to tear down this wall, I mean, who else in that time would have done something like that? When people, even his own State Department was telling him that was inflammatory language.
Oh, indeed. And you weren't, you weren't supposed to. I mean, I remember in high school, my teachers telling me that, communism's not like democracy, but it's another form of government, and every form of government has positives to it, and so we really ought to try to understand it, not criticize it. And
right.
Reagan said that's just nonsense.
Well, he proved to them that they could afford either butter or weapons, butter or bullets, I think they called it, and we could afford both. And he showed them, and you know, people complained about the military buildup of the 80s that he presided over, and he did do that.
Indeed,
but he
did.
Proved to the Russians, to the Soviets, that we could afford butter and bullets.
Indeed, and he also, with the Star Wars proposal, he also showed to the Russians that American technology was so far ahead of whatever technology they have that they would never catch up. And I think that's part of the reason that they finally just said, you know, we're not going to be able to do this anymore.
The notion that Reagan would propose and they believed he would follow through with Star Wars scared the bejeebers out of the Soviets, didn't it?
It certainly did. And yeah. being rid of the Soviet Union is a good thing for the world.
The peace dividend that we're getting from the Cold War being over is a dividend that my grandchildren are going to benefit from. And that, in my opinion, is a wonderful legacy for Ronald Reagan. Ten Till, I'm Jim Blassingame. We're visiting with Governor Pete DuPont. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 7:10. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Governor Pete DuPont is our guest. He's policy chairman for the National Center for Policy Analysis. And Governor, tell us a little bit about NCPA.
Well, we're what everyone calls a think tank. We work mostly on economic matters, health care, taxation, social security. You know, and we just got our little online newsletter out, and it's just www.ncpa.org. But we got it out. You know, this is the first year, 2004, that Medicare and Social Security are going to have to draw money from general funds to pay their benefits. First time in, maybe not technically the first time in history, but the first time when there's been serious shortfalls. And there's a big problem coming. In about 20 years, more than half the money that's brought in by taxes is going to be needed to pay out to Medicare and Social Security beneficiaries. And, of course, the baby boomers retiring drive that number up.
It's a train wreck waiting to happen, isn't it?
Oh, it is a catastrophe waiting to happen. And, you know, I've been talking about this for almost 20 years, and you could never get anybody to pay attention. And I think another few months, they're going to start paying attention. This year, about 2% of revenues are going to have to go back instead of extra money coming in from Medicare and Social Security, money's going to start going the other way. It's the Medicare problem at the moment, but Social Security will be that way in another half dozen years, too.
Well, and my generation, the baby boomers, will be 70 in about 15 years.
Exactly.
And so that's... Which is a fact that I'm not all that excited about, but it's a reality, and you're right about that, Governor. And of course that, and I'm the newsletter you got going out this week talks about that, right?
Yes, it does.
And they can subscribe to that newsletter when they go to ncpa.org.
Yeah, if they go online, you can sign up to the Daily Policy Digest, actually, which comes every day by email and talks about the half a dozen. Most interesting policy actions of the day before, and you can go from there.
They can also see your columns on the Wall Street Journal's Opinion Journal, can't they?
Yes, they can. And actually, next week's columns coming up on Monday, and we were talking about this earlier, is about Michael Barone's new book, Hard America, Soft America, which talks about the tremendous contrast between, say, the 60s and 70s, when everything in America was soft, taxes were higher, regulations were more, school standards were declining.
Tell us what he means by soft.
Well, by soft, he means that the government is concerned more than anything else with getting benefits to people and regulating what's going on in society rather than growing and giving everyone opportunity. And hard America, and Reagan would be hard America,
right,
says, listen,
absolutely.
Market economies are what matters. We want to give individuals the widest possible choice, the greatest number of opportunities, and let them choose because they'll choose the right thing. America says, no, government can choose better for us.
In soft America, nobody gets fired, everybody gets promoted. In hard America, employers have the ability to fire and therefore don't mind hiring.
Exactly. And, there was a time in soft America in the 70s when welfare benefits became greater than the wage you could earn as a minimum wage employee.
I remember those days.
Welfare rolls just skyrocketed. President Clinton changed that. He signed the law that said we're not going to have that kind of a welfare system anymore. Everybody who's physically able is going to have to go to work, and the welfare rolls went from over 12 million people down to about 4, and opportunity came back to those 8 or 9 million families.
That's exactly right. Governor, when I lived on the farm, my dad and I had a crop in the field that we needed to get in one day because a big storm was coming. We didn't have enough hands, and so we went by some people who we knew were on welfare, and we told them we would pay them a premium. Please come help us get our crop in. You know what they said? No, I'm sorry. If we work for you, you'd pay us, and we would lose our welfare benefits.
All right.
And they sat there and took their welfare and watched us. We got our crop in, but it was rough.
Right. I would say in Michael Barone's book, and it's really worth reading.
It's called Hard America, Soft America.
Soft America.
Right.
And I think the principal point he makes that is in soft America, the distribution of wealth is more important than its creation.
Right.
Hard America, it's the other way around, and that, of course, was Ronald Reagan with the tax cuts.
Well said. Well said, Governor. Thank you for being here. We look forward to your next visit already. Thank you for sharing your thoughts on Ronald Reagan.
Thanks very much.
Governor Pete DuPont, ladies and gentlemen, he'll be back. I will be, too, in the next hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Don't go away.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.